Good evening and welcome to the Sunshine Sharing Hour. I'm Stephen Horn, and tonight we're going to talk about natural remedies for the prostate. So this is really a personal one because we're going to talk about a problem I actually have. So let's first of all just talk about what the prostate is. It's not prostrate, that's lying down. Prostate. The prostate is about the size of a walnut, and it's donut-shaped because it sits right underneath the bladder in men and wraps around the urethra, which is the passage coming out of the bladder for the urine. And it has receptor sites for androgens, various forms of testosterone, and also receptor sites for estrogens. The primary purpose of the prostate is that it releases a milky alkaline fluid that basically is part of semen. However, like the uterus, it also appears to have a role in helping to combust or utilize hormones to help with, fat metabolism, other processes that we may not be fully aware of. So this is a little more, clear picture of the male anatomy. You can see right up here at the top the urinary bladder, and then you can see the urethra coming down through the prostate gland, which is wrapped right around the urethra into the tube. So what the major problems with this particular gland also affect the urinary system, which is where you get the primary symptoms. This is another picture of it, again, with the opening coming out of the bladder, the little tube going down through the center. There's actually several layers to the prostate tissue. And then there's a little, this is the sphincter muscle down at the bottom. So that's basically where it sits. So there are three common prostate problems. They're all kind of interconnected, although benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is enlargement of prostate that's non-malignant, can be accompanied by prostatitis. It is not in and of itself an indicator of a tendency to cancer. However, chronic prostatitis can lead to cancer or be a precursor to cancer. But all three of these problems basically are going to create enlargement of the tissue in the prostate, which is going to basically cause problems with urination and the ability of a man to empty the bladder. So the difference between prostatitis and BPH is that BPH is a non-malignant growth of the prostate. So the prostate itself is enlarging. And the fact that the prostate gets larger, it causes it to put pressure on the urethra, which basically causes problem with urination. That typically doesn't involve a lot of other pain, although there may be some pain or difficulty with urination. But inflammation of the prostate causes the prostate to swell or engorge with fluid, which has the same effect, also putting pressure on the urethra. But this, because there's an inflammatory process there present, tends to be accompanied by pain. Pain in the lower pelvis, sometimes pain in the back, burning urination, and other kinds of problems. Now, traditionally, before modern medicine kind of differentiated these things, there was a term called stranguri, which was basically when men have trouble urinating. In other words, their urine is being strangled, and that was basically variety of herbal remedies and everything were used for that problem. A lot of the remedies that work on BPH also work on prostatitis. So when it comes to natural therapy, the way that you approach this is often very similar. The symptoms of both of these conditions include difficulty starting urination, meaning that you fill your bladder full, you go to pee, and you have a hard time getting the start of urine flowing, and it's a strain to get the urine flowing. The urine stream is weak. There's a flap at the end of the penis that has to open up, And so, and the urine has to push that flap open. If the urine stream is weak, it doesn't push the flap open completely, which can cause a very difficult problem in aiming correctly. So the urine can come out at an angle and shoot, miss the toilet. But also the fact that the flap doesn't completely open because there's not enough pressure to push the urine out means that their little urine can remain in the urethra and you can have some dribbling taking place after you've urinated. You can have this feeling that you're getting some of the urine out of the bladder and you're not emptying it completely, so you still feel an urge to urinate. That becomes problematic because that actually does happen. The bladder doesn't empty enough, and so there's always urine kind of sitting in the bladder, which can irritate the bladder, and if it's concentrated enough, can actually cause bladder stones to form. You can also get a frequent urge to urinate. In other words, because the bladder isn't emptying completely, you're only kind of maybe emptying a third of it or something, then it fills up quite quickly again, and then you feel the urge to pee, but you're never really totally emptying it. It can cause painful urination, particularly with prostatitis. Also, men with this have a problem called nocturia, which is basically having to wake up a lot at night to urinate, or experiencing a sudden uncontrollable urge to urinate, can all be symptoms of this problem. Prostatitis, which again is the inflammatory cause for this problem, has several different categories. Acute prostatitis is a bacterial infection of the prostate gland. And the way you treat that is with antibiotics, or in the case if you're treating it naturally, you would use the same kind of herbs that you use to treat a urinary tract infection because it's basically very similar to urinary tract infection. However, that accounts for very, very few of the cases of prostatitis. There may be a, chronic bacterial infection, but most chronic prostatitis, 90 to 95% of the cases, there is no bacterial infection or infection causing the inflammation. One of the things that often happens is people think that because there's inflammation, that that's an infection. But a lot of conditions, from bronchitis and other sorts of things that are thing, may be being caused by other problems like chemicals or, other things that are irritating the tissues of the body. So I think, having urine that is not diluted enough because the person doesn't drink enough water. There may be chemicals being flushed out through the urine, which may be irritating the prostate. These could all be symptom. There's also a very rare condition where there's no history of genitourinary pain or whatever, but there's pus in the urine, suggesting like there's an infection, but there isn't really a sign of infection. That's a rare one. Most of the cases of prostatitis are basically an inflammation that's being caused by something other than an infection. Okay? In contrast, benign prostatic hyperplasia is basically where the prostate just starts getting bigger. And the way they medically diagnose that, they make it in stages of 1 through 4, from mild to severe, depending both on the size of the prostate and how bad the symptoms are affecting the person's life. This is very, very common problem. Half of all men between the ages of 50 and 60 will develop BPH. And by the time men reach 80, about 80% of men will have BPH. Basically, most men, if they live long enough, will experience some problems with BPH in our society. It's a progressive disease. In other words, if you don't treat it, if you don't do something about it, it tends to just get worse and worse the older you get, and becomes more and more of a problem. There are some secondary problems that develop from this. The not being able to void all the urine basically means that you get a higher risk of urinary tract infections, so you can have BPH, and then that can cause you to get acute prostatitis from a urinary tract infection, or just maybe even an inflammatory thing that's not an infection, associated with that. Plus, as I mentioned, the urine being sitting there, especially if it's not well diluted, you can get stones in the bladder that can increase the pain and discomfort with urination. Plus, the bladder can get distended from holding too much urine, which causes loss of muscle tone, which makes it harder to urinate because then it's harder, you know, to get the bladder to squeeze to push the urine out. So what causes BPH is actually not really fully understood. Now, the most popular explanation, which is probably an explanation that's valid as far as what's happening, is that there's a form of testosterone, dihydrotestosterone, DHT for short, that basically attaches to the prostate and signals the prostate to grow. However, that can't be the only reason, because Chinese and American men both have similar levels of DHT as they age, but Chinese men have lower levels of BPH. So DHTs. I mean, they have lower levels of BHP, so they have the same levels of DHT, but they don't have as much BPH. So the dihydrotestosterone cannot be the sole causal factor here. The current, more popular theory, and the one that I think makes more sense, is that as a man starts producing less and less testosterone, which is happening a lot in our culture. Men have much lower levels of testosterone than they did 20 or 30 years ago, due to a variety of factors like xenoestrogens and poor diet, lack of exercise, all kinds of things. Then as men age, the ratio of estrogens to testosterone changes, and that appears to basically make the DHT cause the prostate to grow. So it's a combination probably of increased exposure to estrogens and estrogen-like compounds with less testosterone and more DHT. So that means that I think that dietary estrogens, which are called phytoestrogens, estrogens that are found in plants, and xenoestrogens, which are chemical compounds that mimic estrogen, which are increasingly prevalent in our society, may be what's causing this to become so epidemic. I mean, xenoestrogens are found in plastics. We have tons and tons and tons and tons of plastics in the ocean. I mean, literally tons of plastics in the ocean. And those plastics, as they degrade, are polluting the ocean with xenoestrogenic chemicals. And as well as the fact that we have xenoestrogens as pesticides, herbicides, and other things are used as chemicals in agriculture, as well as estrogens are fed to animals. And so it's a big problem. But there also appears to be a link possibly with hyperinsulinemia. So in other words, high blood sugar levels causing hypersecretion of insulin or metabolic syndrome may also be a reason why the DHT is overstimulating the prostate to basically make these changes. So essentially, it's not really as simplistic as, okay, it's DHT. It's probably a variety of factors that go into this. It's a multifaceted problem. So medical doctors are basically concentrate on two things. One is they use drugs that basically have an antispasmodic effect so that they're relaxing the urethra and basically trying to make it a little easier to urinate. And then the other kind of medication they use are basically 5-alpha reductase blockers. So 5-alpha reductase is an enzyme that converts regular testosterone into DHT. So basically, by inhibiting the action of that enzyme, you're inhibiting conversion of DHT, which then slows down the growth of the prostate or stops the prostate from growing. The problem with that is that 5-alpha reductase isn't just involved in the conversion of testosterone to DHT. It's involved in other chemical reactions in the body, so it causes side effects, which is typical of the way the medications work. If the prostate gets big enough, they resort to surgery to, you know, remove it or cut part of it out. However, there are new procedures where they basically laser, you know, part of the prostate out, or basically use some kind of needle to open up the passageway better, or other things that are less invasive than surgery. So there's other treatments that are happening with conventional medical things. So besides prostatitis and BPH, there is also prostate cancer, which is the second most common cancer in men. The most common cancer in men is skin cancer, interestingly enough, but it's the second leading cause of cancer death in men. The biggest one is lung cancer. However, most men who get prostate cancer actually don't die from it. Even though there are, you know, about 220,000 cases that they, you know, estimate a year, and there'll be about 27,500 deaths, and about 1 in 7 men will get prostate cancer. Most men who are diagnosed with it don't die from it. It generally doesn't metastasize that much. I know that, you know, there are people who've gotten prostate cancer and lived for a decade without even, you know, trying to treat it. So it's not a form of cancer that we're not going to try to get into cancer protocols here, but it is one of the cancers that's estrogen dependent, like breast cancer is, or uterine cancer, and it's probably a lot linked with the excess estrogens, xenoestrogens, and so forth that are present in the diet. So in the therapy for it, you not only would want to do the kinds of things you do naturally to help change the body's internal environment with cancer, but you'd also want to block estrogens and basically cut down on exposure to estrogens. So I've used the plumber because this is like a male plumbing problem. So let's look a little bit at, you know, what we can do. One thing that has been shown to be beneficial for the prostate is omega-3 fatty acids. This is probably particularly helpful for the prostatitis issue. We know that higher levels of omega-3 tend to reduce inflammatory conditions in the body, and so prostatitis is an inflammatory condition, but it also tends to slow down and inhibit prostate cell growth in BPH. So in other words, getting higher levels of omega-3 helps slow down BPH, helps treat prostatitis. It can improve the urine stream, and it also basically can help to increase libido. So Eskimo men who eat a lot of, you know, fish have very low rates of prostatitis and prostate cancer. Another widely published nutrient that's very beneficial for the prostate is lycopene. Lycopene is a carotenoid. And carotenoids are basically the plant forms of your vitamin A. So you have your carotenoids, that are the plant forms, and then you have your retinoids, which are the animal forms. And both carotenoids and retinoids are antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, and they help to reduce your risk of getting cancer. So this is a red pigment, and one of the richest sources of it is tomatoes. So you get the whole thing of, you know, the tomatoes being good for you, but it's also the red pigment in watermelons and strawberries and apricots and shrimp and a number of other foods that have a red or an orange color to them. The the lycopene gets absorbed the best, interestingly enough, from cooked tomatoes rather than from raw tomatoes. And basically, it absorbs best when there are fats in the meal along with it. So lycopene has been shown to trigger apoptosis, which is pre-programmed cell death, in prostate cells that start to become cancerous when it's consumed regularly. So essentially, this is a really good nutrient to help males reduce their risk of prostate cancer. So eating, you know, tomato products can be beneficial for men. Probably the most important of all these nutrients for men is zinc. Zinc is extremely important for sexual health in men. Approximately 5 milligrams of zinc are lost when a man ejaculates. And zinc is necessary for maintaining good testosterone levels. It's a good for health of the sperm. It also helps to inhibit the prostate growth. And it also could help to shrink a prostate that's swollen from prostatitis. Zinc is a very common mineral deficiency. I basically started taking zinc a couple of years ago. I was taking it every day. Now I take it several times a week. The interesting thing is that when I started taking zinc, not only did it help my reproductive function, but it also made my hair color start to come back. My hair was turning gray. So I think zinc may be needed for a lot of males. So besides the omega-3s, the other good fat that can help the prostate is flax seeds or flaxseed oil with lignans. So this isn't the oil so much as the lignans in it. So it has to be flaxseed oil that has lignans or whole flax seeds. Now, the lignans are naturally occurring isoflavones. And isoflavones are what are called phytoestrogens. So phytoestrogens will bind to estrogen receptor sites, but they're very weak, so they don't stimulate them very strongly. And therefore, they help to block the effect of xenoestrogens and other environmental estrogens. And so the lignans in flax appear to help reduce the risk of both BPH and help prevent cancer. And there was one study done that showing that men taking 300 to 600 milligrams of flax lignin per day basically had improvement in BPH symptoms. Now, I think that another part of this picture is exercise. And I think this is a big reason, but a big thing that affects my prostate, because I know when I travel and I'm scrunched on planes and I'm 6'4", so having to sit in economy class on an airplane with my knees scrunched up against the seat and being hours, you know, inactive and all that stuff during that period of time, my prostate always gets worse and I always wind up with difficulty with urination and blah, blah, blah. And it's frustrating. And I also work way too much at a desk, and there is indications that men who are working more, you know, where they're constantly sitting down and you're basically constantly compressing that area of your body when you're sitting, you're basically going to congest the circulation and everything in the lower part of your body. And that may be a factor, because BPH is more common in men who work desk jobs or who are truck drivers or have any job where they sit for long periods of time and don't get as much of physical activity. So I also notice that when I'm more physically active, like when I'm out working in the garden and doing stuff like that, there's some significant improvement in those symptoms that occur. So exercise also helps in men increase testosterone levels. It helps men lose weight. Fat cells produce more estrogens in men. So basically, the physical activity is probably an important part of natural therapy for this. This other part, which is something that I have to work with in myself, and where I've worked with some men who have worked with some guys who have had this long enough that they have bladder stones and urination becomes very painful, they don't want to drink water. The problem is not drinking water makes the problem worse, because as the urine becomes more and more concentrated, then it's more and more irritating to the bladder and the prostate. It's more and more formation of stones. And basically, you've got to dilute, keep the urine diluted so that your urine is fairly light colored. And I have to force, and part of the reason why that gets frustrating is because you're drinking a lot of water and your bladder doesn't empty fully. Then it means you're going to the bathroom a lot, but what happens is if you get the urine more diluted, it actually reduces the prostate irritation, and then you're able to empty the bladder better. So it's sort of like you've got to endure the frequent urination to get your body better hydrated in order to get this to work. I might also mention that the male apparatus works better, going back to the exercise thing, when a guy pees standing up. There's better alignment, there's less pressure on the prostate, and so it's easier to urinate, which again can be a problem because as you get a little bit of BPH or prostatitis, you have a harder time aiming, which means that you may be encouraged to sit down so you don't spill anything, but then when you sit down, you can't fully void your bladder as easily as you can when you're standing up. So there's kind of some things you got to take into consideration here if you really want to get the best, therapy out of this. So what we're going to do is now talk about some single prostate remedies from Nature Sunshine. And we're going to start with saw palmetto, which is basically has a long history of use as a remedy for difficult urination in men. And it has had some research done on it, which suggests it can be helpful for mild to moderate BPH. It is not helpful for severe BPH. It really doesn't have much of an effect at all. So if a person's probably at stage 4 prostatitis, saw palmetto, I doubt, is going to do them much good. But if they're in like 1 or 2 beginning stages, it could be helpful. It has been shown in clinical studies to increase urine flow, to relieve nocturnia, which is getting up at night having to pee, by up to 73%. It can make urination less painful. It can help to reduce prostate swelling and inhibit prostate growth. So it helps with both the prostatitis, which is the inflammatory thing, as well as the BPH. So it's also considered traditionally a sexual infertility tonic, so it has some other benefits. The eclectics considered it to be useful for pelvic congestion and atrophy of the testes, and because it is also a remedy, a non-irritating diuretic, which means it is not, a lot of diuretics work by irritating the urinary passages. This is what juniper berry does. This is what buchu does. They contain compounds that once you absorb them into your body through the gastrointestinal tract, they are flushed out through the kidneys and they're mildly irritating to the kidneys and bladder, so they cause you to pee more. Okay? But you also have what are called non-irritating diuretics, which are more soothing, and this is one of them, and it's one of the remedies that can be helpful for burning urination, interstitial cystitis, and urinary tract infections, so it has a soothing effect. So if there's burning or painful urination, it can be helpful for that. So there are a number of constituents in saw palmetto that are helpful for this. One is it contains fatty acids, and this is a large part of what's in the saw palmetto berries, and it's what they tend to concentrate when they make a concentrate too. And these fatty acids have been shown to inhibit the production of DHT by inhibiting 5-alpha reductase. Now, what's interesting about the herbal remedies is because they don't have as strong of an inhibiting effect as the drugs do, they don't tend to have the side effects of the drugs. So even though potentially the fact that this has some effect on inhibiting 5-alpha reductase and therefore potentially has all the side effects that you'd get with the drugs, clinically it just doesn't seem to show that way, whether it's other constituents in the plant that are affecting that or whatever, we don't know, but it really doesn't do this. There are also high molecular weight alcohols that also inhibit 5-alpha reductase and also inhibit the proliferation of prostate cells. There are triterpenes that have a bactericide action, which means they help to kill bacterial infections in the urinary tract. And in the whole herb only, but not in the standardized extracts, there are also polysaccharides that have immune stimulating properties. So if you take the concentrate, you're not going to get the immune stimulating properties, but if you take the whole berries, you're going to get that. The typical dose of these would probably be just give me a second here to make sure I'm remembering this correctly. You need on a standardized extract about 85 to 90, about 160 milligrams of the standardized extract. And so the Nature Sunshine product, you only need like 1 to 2 capsules a day of the standardized extract. For the whole berries, you probably would want to take three times a day to get they're not quite as potent. And you would want to take the remedy twice a day, once in the morning and once in the evening at least, so it works throughout the day. Now, I had tried actually quite a few different prostate herbs, prostate formulas. I didn't feel like any of them really helped me that much. Nature Sunshine came out with this product, Equilibrium, and I tried it, and this has helped me more than anything I've tried. So what Equilibrium contains is just a single compound. It's Equal, and Equal is an isoflavone, but it's actually a derivative of an isoflavone. So there's an isoflavone called daidzine, okay, and basically intestinal bacteria will convert daidzine into Equal, and Equal is a phytoestrogen, so it has it'll bond to certain receptor sites. There are two forms, the S form and the R form, which are mirror images of each other, but only the S form is the one that's produced in the human body. And this S form, which is what's in the Equilibrium, has been shown to have some beneficial effects for prostate as well as for other health. So some people naturally produce Equal when they eat foods that contain daidzine. So the richest sources of that are soy products, fava beans, and kudzu, but there's some of it in peas and other beans, as well as red clover. Red clover is a traditional anti-cancer herb, but it's really a good one for estrogen-dependent cancers because it contains the phytoestrogens that make one actually less sensitive to environmental estrogens, as well as there's small amounts in grains, nuts, coffee, tea, and currants. But principally, it's in beans that you're going to get this from. So if you've got the right intestinal bacteria, you'll make this stuff, okay, in your body when you eat those foods. There are 21 strains of intestinal bacteria that have been identified that make this transformation, but only about 25-30% of people in Western countries appear to be able to have the right gut flora to make equal. Whereas in Asian countries, about 50 to 60% of people have that. Now that right there may be part of the reason why Chinese men have lower rates of BPH than Western men, because basically if they're able to produce more of this naturally occurring phytoestrogen, then it's going to inhibit prostate growth. Interestingly enough, xylitol has been shown to enhance the proliferation of bacteria that make equal. So for those of you who use xylitol, that can help. And also seaweeds, which are quite prevalent in Asian diets, also appear to enhance the conversion. So the eating of the beans and the soy products with the seaweeds and other, you know, foods that are rich in iodine apparently is part of the reason why they have this protective effect against the BPH. So what EQUAL does is it doesn't inhibit the formation of DHT. It actually binds directly to the DHT, which inhibits it from binding to the receptor sites in the prostate. So it basically doesn't disrupt the enzyme that forms DHT. It actually keeps the DHT from binding the prostate and stimulating its growth. So this means that it doesn't have the side effects that the 5-alpha reductase blockers do. But it also has a secondary effect in that being a phytoestrogen, it also appears to block the estrogens in the prostate. So basically it has a dual action there of inhibiting the action of estrogens on the prostate as well as inhibiting the action of DHT on the prostate. So there is a pretty good body of clinical research showing that EQUAL actually helps to reduce both prostatitis and also the risk of prostate cancer, as well as halting and even helping to reverse BPH. There is also, in addition to working on the prostate, there is also some other research about benefits of EQUAL. Because EQUAL is a phytoestrogen, it does appear to reduce risk of cancers of the breast and uterus as well as the prostate. So again, the current scientific theory is because phytoestrogens tend to be 1,000 times weaker than xenoestrogens or the body's own estrogens. So when a phytoestrogen binds to a receptor site, it's preventing a stronger estrogen from binding to that receptor site, giving a much weaker stimulus to the receptor site, and thereby inhibiting overstimulation of those receptors. So there was one study suggesting that EQUAL might inhibit breast cancer cells from proliferating, and another study showed EQUAL induced apoptosis in hepatic cancer cells. However, the studies in general with using isoflavones like EQUAL with cancer have some mixed results. So I wouldn't, you know, trust it as necessarily a cancer remedy. It might be beneficial as far as an overall cancer protocol for breast, prostate, or uterine cancer, but I would not rely on it solely, and I would use some kind of intuitive checking, muscle testing or whatever, and also monitor the results to make sure the person was responding favorably to it. But there were three studies using animal models that showed that S-EQUAL did not stimulate the growth of estrogen-dependent tumors. So my hunch is that probably it would, you know, have more of an inhibitory effect. EQUAL also has some potential to have some benefits for menopausal women. So even though this is, you know, primarily talked about with men, I thought we ought to just, you know, talk a little bit more about EQUAL. There were two placebo-controlled studies where they supplemented EQUAL with women who didn't produce it, and it showed some modest, not huge improvement, but modest improvement in menopausal symptoms. And there was another study that was not placebo-controlled with American women that showed results. So you could combine this with other remedies like flashies for helping with menopause. There are other properties of EQUAL. It's antioxidant, it's anti-inflammatory, it's also vasorelaxant, which means it relaxes blood vessels. It may increase nitric oxide production, which dilates the arteries and helps to lower blood pressure. There is also some research suggesting EQUAL may help with hyperinsulinemia. So remember, we said that hyperinsulinemia, or the blood sugar thing, may be a factor of BPH because it basically helps cells metabolize glucose a little better. So these are possible, quote-unquote, side effects of taking EQUAL for by BPH. It helped inhibit metabolic syndrome in pregnant women. There's some interest in using it to improve skin and aging and also possibly osteoporosis, but there's no really reliable data at this point to say that it would do that. Okay. So basically, for a non-EQUAL producer, basically taking 8 to 15 milligrams of S-EQUAL daily basically corresponds to what to the levels that people would have if they're producing it naturally. So basically that would make it a very safe, normal supplement. Each capsule of Equilibrium contains 6 milligrams of S-EQUAL. So if you take 2 capsules a day, you're getting 12 milligrams right smack dab in the middle of the amount that's suggested. So you want to take it one twice a day. It has a half-life of 7 to 8 hours. Now, what that means is that between 7 to 8 hours after you take it, half of it is gone, which means over about a 16-hour period, it would dissipate from the system. So that's why if you want to keep your EQUAL levels up, you basically want to take at least one capsule twice a day. I didn't notice immediate improvement. It takes usually a couple of weeks to start noticing improvement. I can be really lousy about remembering sometimes to take my supplements, but when I've been on EQUAL regularly for about a month or 6 weeks or so, I notice definite improvement in the symptoms. And then if I get lazy and I start backing off of it and forgetting to take it, they gradually start to come back. So I'm getting pretty better about keeping it consistent. So this is not like I wouldn't say this is like something that's going to cure the problem, stop it, but it's a really good management for the problem. So if you take it consistently over a long period of time, you're going to get the best results. It appears to be very well tolerated, so don't appear to be any serious problems. But there, soy isoflavones do appear to have a mild thyroid inhibiting effect. It's very mild, but you know, again, in Asia they eat a lot of seaweeds, and iodine increases the conversion of diazine to EQUAL. So if you have a tendency to low thyroid, you might want to take some kelp or seaweeds when you're supplementing with this. Okay, so let's talk about some of the formulas that Nature Sunshine has that could be helpful for the prostate. By the way, I have tried men's formula prior, and I didn't notice near the benefit for me with that I did with the Equilibrium. However, I do want to say that there are a lot of men who have seen improvement with this formula. I think it's very well put together. It's got 15 milligrams of zinc, which is a pretty good, this is in the bottle recommended dose, which is pretty good supplementation level for zinc. It's got saw palmetto, which we talked about as one of the herbs that has proven research showing it affects 5-alpha reductase. It has pumpkin seed, and pumpkin seeds also contain fatty acids that are mildly soothing to the urinary passages. Pumpkin seeds are also naturally rich in zinc, and they do have a very mild effect on inhibiting BPH in the prostate. Pygium and stinging nettle root, which are two other ingredients in this formula, also have proven, you know, scientifically proven benefits for helping to reduce BPH and prostatitis, again, affecting the 5-alpha reductase enzyme. I have not found the reason why Gota Cola is considered useful in this formula. I need to do a little more research and see why that was included here. Because it's not a typical remedy that I've seen for prostate problems. But lycopene, which we talked about, is also in this formula, a standardized lycopene extract, which again has a protective effect against prostate cancer. So this formula actually does have a protective effect against prostate cancer. It has some mild effect in enhancing male fertility, and it can definitely, for many men, be helpful for prostatitis and BPH. If a person checks out for this, there's no reason why they couldn't take this and Equilibrium at the same time. Like I say, I haven't, this formula for some reason doesn't work so well for me. I don't know why. But part of the thing is saw palmetto does tend to enhance metabolism. And, I do find that saw palmetto is not necessarily the best for people who are trying to lose weight, for that reason. PS2 is a traditional prostate formula that was basically created by Stan Malmstrom, who was a Utah herbalist. I had my dad, who had some prostate problems, on PS2 many years ago. He felt it was beneficial for him. I think this formula could be dramatically improved. I think herbalism has, there's like a number of other old formulas that we have from Stan Malmstrom, Don John Christopher, and that a lot of Nature Sunshine managers are like, oh, don't touch it. But honestly, there are some ingredients in here that I think could be dropped and some more effective ingredients added to make this a much more effective herbal formula for prostate things. But it does have pumpkin seed and saw palmetto, both of which we know have those benefits. One of the things that it does have that's nice is golden seal. The golden seal is good because golden seal contains berberine, and berberine gets absorbed through the gut wall and is excreted through the urine. So it has a little bit of antiseptic quality for helping reduce prostatitis and bacterial infections in the urinary passages. The ginger and dong quai in this formula are both good for pelvic circulation to reduce pelvic congestion. So that may be part of the reason why they have some benefit here. Lobelia and black cohosh are both antispasmodics. And if you remember, one of the therapies that the medical people use is something to relax the urinary passage to help the urine flow more easily. So lobelia and black cohosh would both have an effect of relaxing muscle tension to basically help ease urination. So this formula still has some benefit, especially for someone who doesn't need to take the zinc or the lycopene. I think that I actually have found taking KBC with Equilibrium has worked quite well for me. KBC is a formula for the lack of kidney qi, which is called Jing. And in TCM, the idea of Jing is that it's like this basic life essence. And in engaging a lot of sex with ejaculation, because because engaging in sex without ejaculation doesn't deplete your jing, but in TCM, engaging in sex with a lot of ejaculation is believed to deplete your jing or your kidney qi and cause sexual weakness. And there is some evidence that excessive sexual activity in men with ejaculation, not without ejaculation, but with ejaculation, actually may contribute to irritation of the prostate and may be part of the problem here. So this is a formula for increasing the jing and helping with impotency and infertility, as well as helping urinary passages work better. So I have found that when I take this along with the equilibrium, it seems to help me a lot as long as I'm drinking plenty of water. So this is another formula that you might want to consider as helpful for men who are having problems with their plumbing. There are quite a few questions that have been answered. I'm going to get to the questions in a minute. I just wanted to just tell you that next week our Holistic Perspective webinar is on mind-body connections, which is basically about the holistic thing of our body, mind, and emotions, and how all physical ailments have a mental and emotional component. All mental and emotional problems have a physical component. And we're going to talk about some of those links of how those things link up. And then our Sunshine Sharing Herbal Hour and our Sunshine Sharing for next month will be on anxiety and anxiety disorders and remedies. So we'll be talking about anxiousness and so forth. Herbal Hour is actually March 20. I didn't get that date changed. It's actually March 25th. Okay, sorry about that. I copy these slides over and then change them, and sometimes I miss something. So the Sunshine Sharing Hour is March 24th, which is Tuesday. The Herbal Hour is Wednesday, March 25th. And then I have an Introduction to Iridology free class that will be March 4th that you can register for. And I'm also teaching a practical iridology class, which is an IPA Level 1 class. It's $247 for members. If you've already purchased practical iridology, this course is an IPA Level 1, which means I have to charge for basically $50 for IPA membership, plus there is a new manual. I'm updating the practical iridology manual to match IPA standards, so that class will start March 18th. The manuals probably won't ship until April, though. So anyway, you can register at treelight.com or call our toll-free number for information about that. So now to the questions. Okay. Now someone asked, is it true that parasites can get into that area which can cause some of the problems with the prostate? Now, that's an interesting question. And to basically answer that, years ago, I heard Jack Richardson talk about the fact that parasites could contribute to prostate problems. But it's not that there are parasites in the prostate. What he's talking about, and I'm going to pull up this slide again so that you can see right back here is the anus. And you know, when the doctor does the prostate exam, he sticks a finger in there so he can feel the prostate, because the prostate is right next to the rectum. So I do believe, and this is something I've noticed in myself, that if I'm constipated, that it puts more pressure on my prostate and makes urination more difficult. Whereas when I, going number two more better, I have less irritation on my urinary passage. So Jack Richardson believed you could get some parasites in here in the rectum, and that inflammation then could transfer over and affect the prostate. That's entirely possible, or it could just be the colon having a lot of irritation, causing problems with the prostate. Part of the reason why he may have believed that was the case is because herbal pumpkin, which I didn't put in as a formula for the prostate, actually does have some benefit for the prostate, but it's probably more like the pumpkin seeds in it than it is the fact that it's a link between killing parasites and solving the prostate problem. So I hope that answers your question. I don't know why the testosterone would be converting to estrogen. The both men and women produce both testosterone and estrogen in different ratios, and there are enzymes that basically they all actually come from very similar root hormones. They all are produced from DHEA. So why that's happening and why those adjustments take place, no one really knows. There's a lot we just don't know about how all that works. Someone said, what kind of estrogens do they shoot into chicken wings? I haven't. I mean, I know. I don't know what that is. I've never heard of that. I know that it's very common to feed estrogens to chickens that lay eggs and dairy cattle that produce milk, because estrogens increase milk production and egg production. And years ago, when I lived in Springville, Utah, we were right next to a chicken factory, as I call them, where they raise chickens for eggs in those little teeny cages. And they buy sexed chickens, i.e. baby chicks are supposed to be, you know, all females, but there inevitably will be a few males creep in there. And they were going to kill all the baby chicks that had turned out to be males. And we said, well, why don't you let us have them? So these chicks were probably about 2-3 weeks old when we got them. But they were unlike the other roosters because their cocks were deformed. They'd already been fed enough estrogens to cause reproductive malfunction for them. They weren't normal roosters. So that becomes a problem. Commercial chicken, eggs, we're getting dosages of xenoestrogens because they're fed to the animals. Okay. And I did address the issue that constipation can affect the prostate, and so forth. How much lycopene? I don't know. When people ask me that question, I think, well, how many carrots should you eat? I mean, I don't know. I think that they generally say if you eat like one serving of tomato products a day, that actually helps to reduce the risk of prostate cancer. So that could be, you know, I mean, you could have some tomato soup, you could have some tomato sauce with pizza, whatever. So the best way to do that, in my opinion, is just to, you know, eat, lots of brightly colored foods, including, you know, tomato products. The zinc. Okay. Nature Sunshine zinc is 25 milligrams. 25 milligrams is actually a pretty good therapeutic dose for a normal man. If a person has a zinc deficiency and needs to rebuild their zinc levels, they could actually take 2, or about 50 milligrams a day. However, zinc is an antagonist of copper. So zinc and copper compete in the body for absorption. So if you're taking 50 milligrams of zinc a day, that's a high enough level that you probably should also be getting a little copper. And the best way to get the copper from Nature Sunshine products is to take liquid chlorophyll, because liquid chlorophyll is sodium copper chlorophyllin, which basically means it's got copper instead of magnesium in the chlorophyll molecule. So basically drinking a little bit of liquid chlorophyll, taking 50 milligrams of copper would probably, 50 milligrams of zinc would probably give you enough copper to help offset the higher level of zinc. Saw palmetto, by the way, has been used as a food. So the dose of saw palmetto, you could actually take way more than the label recommendations, because anything that's been used as a food basically can have a much higher dose. David Winston, who I think is one of the best herbalists out there, says that the capsules, non-standardized capsules, that you probably should take 6 to 9 500 milligrams capsules a day. So that's pretty much your average capsule size. I don't know the exact amount of milligrams in a Nature Sunshine capsule. So that's 2 or 3 capsules 3 times a day. You possibly could go higher than that, but that's really not a problem. There, saw palmetto is really safe, especially for men. There is a problem with saw palmetto with women who are breastfeeding because saw palmetto inhibits prolactin and therefore might interfere with lactation. But for men, there is, you know, no known effects from taking it. So if you could always take more. Saw palmetto is also useful for urinary problems in both men and women. It can be helpful for, like say, scalding urination and so forth. It also can be helpful for coughs. It's good for irritable coughs, bronchitis. It has a little bit of a respiratory tonic nature to it, as well as its other properties. Man, again, the saw palmetto should probably be taken. You need to space out the doses so that you're getting, you know, the stuff has what you might think of as half-life. So at least twice a day you want to take stuff so that you're getting spread out. If you want to, you know, the standardized preparations, generally speaking, you need to take a lot less. So a lot of people are not willing to swallow that many capsules of the whole herb. So the standardized extract is probably better for them because they only need to swallow a couple of capsules a day. And I think that it's really kind of a person's preference or maybe what they muscle test for or just a little experimentation, what works best for them. I don't think the genetically modified has anything to do with the soy isoflavones and how they affect the cancer. I personally think that it's hard to tell with research, you know, how unbiased the research is. But I personally believe that the beans, whole grains, and things that contain the natural phytoestrogens in whole food form are more likely protective against cancer than they are to cause any increase in cancer, simply because the phytoestrogens are so much weaker than the xenoestrogens. So I really don't have any concern about that. I should mention, and I should have put a slide in about this, that men who have prostate problems should probably do a lot to minimize their exposure both to phytoestrogens and to xenoestrogens. So in addition to being careful with plastics and non-organic dairy and eggs and so forth, and also sprayed crops, it's a good idea for men with prostate problems to avoid soy, which is way too estrogenic for most men, and also hops, which includes beer. Hops is highly estrogenic, and there is some evidence showing that regular consumption of beer, which is made with hops extract, can actually increase prostatitis and BPH. The herbal hour version of our topic, which Thomas easily helps me with, is not Nature Sunshine. What I have is I have an option for people who are involved in Nature Sunshine, and I have an option for members who are not involved in Nature Sunshine. So we, in the the herbal hour, we're not talking about Nature Sunshine products. We'll talk about white sage and pygium and nettle root extract and rye pollen extract and all the different single remedies and things that are out there for prostate problems and kind of different, you know, examples of prostate remedies out there. But it's not a nature's, if you want the nature sunshine only, then watch the Sunshine Sharing Hour. If you want more generic information just about the problem in general, then watch the Herbal Hour. Okay. And if you want both, you watch both. And also, if you need to, you know, lecture to a group that doesn't want you to talk about products, then use the Herbal Hour presentation to lecture to them, because then you can give a generic lecture. Okay, I'm not sure about the how to deal with the problem with the testicle that someone's answering about. I'm not familiar with that. I'd have to do a little bit of research on that. Okay, when doctors test for prostate problems, which is a good idea, and actually if you do have symptoms, you know, if you want to make sure you're dealing with, you know, BPH or it's not prostate cancer, you should go get a medical checkup. The prostate cancer thing is typically determined by blood tests that measure things like PSA. But basically a medical doctor would know what tests to run to determine that kind of thing. So the pumpkin seeds, which are high in zinc, go back to what you said about the zinc helping the prostate. I heard that parasites don't like pumpkin seeds. Well, they're okay. Pumpkin seeds basically do have an antiparasitic effect. They appear to kind of numb parasites, basically kind of make them kind of knock them out a little bit, make them lazy so they don't like what to eat, and basically make it easier to flush them from the system. They don't actually kill the parasites, but they do make it easier to expel the parasites. So pumpkin seeds do have an antiparasitic effect, but I doubt it's the antiparasitic effect that's affecting the prostate. It's more likely the zinc and the fatty acids, which, like the fatty acids in soft palmetto, have an effect on the prostate. The fatty acids in zinc pumpkin seeds have an effect on helping the prostate. I have heard of prostate milking, and honestly, if you have a man with prostatitis and you're willing to do it, basically, massaging the prostate gland internally by putting on a rubber glove and lubricating one of the fingers and going in there and milking or massaging the prostate will actually do a wonders, help reduce the swelling of the prostate and actually help it to heal. You just got to have someone who really cares about you who's willing to do that for you. So that's why I didn't actually talk about it in the presentation, but definitely it is a helpful therapy. I wish I had someone who's willing to do that for me. Okay, the GMO corn and wheat aren't probably what's causing the inflammation. Really, what the problem with one of the big problems with the GMO stuff is the fact that the reason why they've genetically modified the corn and the soybeans, and apparently it's not so much that they've genetically modified the wheat as they use Roundup to basically help the wheat die so that it will they don't lose the crop, whatever. But they're spraying Roundup, which is a glycophosphate, onto all these crops, the corn, the soybeans, and the wheat. And the GMOs are basically to get the plants to tolerate higher levels of this poison. Well, what that means is that poison is going into the soil, but it's being taken up by the plants. So you have high levels of this toxic herbicide in the wheat and the corn and the soybeans, which almost all of your supermarket products, 70 to 80% of the foods you can buy at a supermarket contain wheat, corn, and soybeans that have been sprayed with Roundup. So I really do believe that it's that chemical that's causing the inflammation and the damage more than it is the actual genetic modification, although there is some evidence that the GMO is modifying gut flora. So the high level of toxins are probably, my daughter posted a link to an article on Facebook and I shared it, that basically it's the reason why people are having so much intolerance to wheat is because of the high level of the glycophosphates, the herbicides, residues that are left on the wheat. My son was sick today and he did come in and he was supposed to get the handouts up. I don't know if he got them up in time because he just wasn't feeling well. Someone mentioned that their husband could tell a big difference with Equilibrium, but not so much with supplemental or men's formula. That's exactly my experience. So I really think Equilibrium is a fantastic product. Oh, that's someone. Someone said that castor oil in the rectum is good for prostate inflammation. That's interesting. I haven't tried that. Someone said he did get the handouts done. Okay, so the handouts are up there. It just, you know, so you should be able to download the handouts and go over this. So, all right, that's the end of our questions. I hope that you've learned a lot of useful information here. Someone also said that frankincense with the castor oil is also good. That wouldn't surprise me because frankincense is also good for breast lumps. But I definitely, any essential oil that you're using, I would definitely dilute it very well before applying it anywhere. So thank you again for all being members. Appreciate all your support. And we'll continue to try to bring you some really good information that you can use in helping people and teaching them about the value of these products. But I personally want to say I think Equilibrium is a marvelous product, and I really want people to help get the word out about what a great product that is, because it really does have a very, very good effect, at least for me it did. So thanks, everybody, and good night.